Thanks for tuning to Digital Voices Podcast, where we chat digital transformation, challenges and opportunities across healthcare and life sciences. And now, your host, Ed Marks. Hey, listeners. Just wanted to remind you to register for the Digital Voices Conference on Thursday, June 17th at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Registration is free, and we can't wait to see you there. Now back to the podcast.
Hey, it's Ed here, and welcome to Digital Voices, where we cover digital voices across all of health and life sciences. So everything from the most important voice, which is the patient, to our providers, to our payers, to pharma, big tech, retail, everything in between. And today, we get to hear digital voices actually from an academic and practitioner point of view. So I'm really excited about bringing in that aspect to Digital Voices. And so let me just tell you how I first met with Dr. Gupta. So when I was the CIO at the Cleveland Clinic in leading digital strategy, one day my boss, the CEO, said, hey, we happen to be in a situation where we can bring on a professor from Harvard who's written a book on digital strategy and is taking a sabbatical, and it's on his heart to serve in healthcare and bring some of his insights. And I was so excited. I was like, oh my gosh, wow, this is, I don't have to pay to go to Harvard. I'm actually bringing Harvard to me and Harvard to the Cleveland Clinic. And so I was like so excited to meet with Dr. Gupta and bring him in and help make him comfortable and have him just help our entire organization when it came to digital strategy. So it was just a thrill to be able to serve together and gain a lot of practical insights that he has from all of his experiences serving on boards, working with a variety of companies across different industries, and now into healthcare. So it was really, really quite an amazing opportunity that I had, and wanted to share that voice with you today. So I'll introduce Sunil to us. And he is a Harvard professor, as I mentioned, an author of an excellent book on driving digital strategy. He's also an advisor and simply what I came to know as a really good person. So really happy to have you, Sunil. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Ed. It's a pleasure to see you again, and delighted to share my views with you and your audience.
Awesome. So my audience knows that the most important question that we ask is, what is your favorite music? So when you have downtime and are just chilling, what do you like to listen to?
Oh, my favorite. I listen to all kinds of music. I grew up in India, so I started with the Indian classical, Indian Bollywood music. Then I grew up in the Beatles era, went on to the Beatles era, and then my kids introduced me to Despacito and everything else in between. So I'm an eclectic taste functions there.
Well, that's awesome. So the other question I like to ask, because I kind of sets the tone and gives everyone a frame of reference from where you're coming from, is what is your passion or life message or mantra? What's sort of your guiding principle that you live by?
So I believe life is a series of coincidences. And you make the best of the coincidence that you get into, just like I met you and it became a lifelong friendship. And the same thing happened to me. If you look at and ask me as to why did I become a professor, I didn't have this early desire when I was growing up that one day I want to be a professor. I mean, you, as a child, you think about becoming an astronaut or a firefighter. Nobody, at least I know, who says when they're 5 years old, I want to be a professor. And I was the same way. But series of coincidences took me in that direction, and I'm delighted now that I'm doing what I'm doing.
No, that's great. And that sort of rolls right into my next question. Can you just share with us a little bit about your journey, both on a personal and professional level?
Sure. So as I said, I always call myself an accidental professor. And the way that happened was I grew up in India, and I went to the typical colleges in India. There is only two professions that your parents send you to, either medicine or engineering. And I did not want to do medicine because I didn't want to wake up in the middle of the night on a call. So that was my decision-making process, that medicine was out, so that's left engineering. So I went to an engineering college. And then later in the last semester, I realized I really didn't want to be an engineer. So then the question was, what do you do? And so it tells you how thoughtful decisions I make for about my life. And then I ended up doing an MBA back in India, worked for a British company in India, in Delhi, for a couple of years. And then I got bored with my job because I looked at my boss's boss and said, is that the role I want? And the answer was no. And I also saw that the company was making decisions which seemed pretty ad hoc. I said to myself, there must be better ways to make those decisions rather than just seat of the pant. And obviously, I didn't learn enough in my MBA to make those decisions in the right way. There must be an advanced version of MBA.
Right.
So I looked at to the West, looked to the US, and said, US must have the answers that I didn't get in India. At that point in time, I didn't have the money to come to United States to do another MBA. So I couldn't come to Harvard or Stanford or any other place for an MBA. And I said, well, what other ways I can do that? And somebody told me, if you go for a PhD, you actually get a scholarship to go and study. They give you money to go and study. And this is pre-internet era. I didn't know much about what PhD is all about. So to me, PhD was like an advanced MBA. So I said, hey, somebody's giving me money to study. What better way? And if I don't like it, I can always come back. So I actually came for my PhD thinking it was an advanced MBA and I'll go become a consultant somehow. Of course, that myth was taken away very quickly. And even after my PhD, when I finished my PhD, I almost joined McKinsey because that was what I wanted to do. But my advisor convinced me that you should try academia. And I really respect my advisor even today. So I did, and I loved it. And lo and behold, now I'm here. So that's a pure accident on a personal and professional level.
No, I love that, the accidental professor. I'll definitely remember that. Now, I know in recent years, obviously with the publication of your book on digital strategy and certainly your research and work and consulting, prior to that, you've really shifted towards digital transformation. Can you tell us how you, was it on accident that you fell into that as well? Or how did you fall into really focusing on digital transformation?
So I grew up with a functional expertise in marketing. And again, that's a pure accident because my professor in my MBA days, marketing professor were fantastic, others were not. So that was my decision to go into marketing, another accident. And I ended up becoming a marketing professor. And as you can imagine, in the early 2000s, there was a lot of new things happening in the field of marketing with Google and Facebook, et cetera. So we devised a new digital marketing course at Harvard Business School. And very soon you realize marketing is only a small component of the overall things that are happening in the world. So I started studying a little bit more. And that point in time, I also became a chair of a general management program, which is an executive program for senior managers that Harvard runs, where we get people from 40 different countries at a very senior level. In fact, Tom Mihalovich, who is the CEO of Cleveland Clinic, was in that program.
Yes.
When I was chairing. Okay. So we get people like Tom, and therefore my interest expanded from digital marketing to broader issues and digital strategy. And the people I were interacting with, more and more they were asking these questions, what do I do not to become the Kodak or the BlackBerry of the future? So that sort of gave me the impetus. As a consumer, you're always affected by technology, right? So you're
right.
Consuming that. But that became a professional sort of interest to go and study. So I actually ended up studying three groups of companies, the startups and the VCs who fund them. So I made my pilgrimage to Silicon Valley many times. And then I also started what I call the digital giants. These are the Apples, the Amazons, the Facebooks of the world, who grew up digitally, but they are now billion or trillion dollar companies themselves. And then legacy companies like Cleveland Clinic or pharma companies or other healthcare and otherwise, who are legacy companies are much harder to change. So I studied all these three kinds of companies over the last 12 years. And this seems like a field that keeps innovating and changing. So that's always a curious place where you can continue learning forever.
Yeah, so tell us then about your sabbatical. So obviously as a professor, tenured, you have an opportunity for sabbatical. You could choose anything in the world, but you chose healthcare. Can you share a little bit about your motivation?
So I think many people, when they take sabbatical in the academics, they go to another academic institution. I was never interested in doing that. In fact, my first sabbatical many years ago, I did it at McKinsey because I was that I was at the back of my mind, am I missing something? So I wanted a more practical connection. I've always been applied in my orientation. The sabbatical at Cleveland Clinic happens just by coincidence, another coincidence. And that's because my wife is interested in healthcare. She's working with a nonprofit cancer institution for a long time. And she also did a master's in hospitality and healthcare management. And then she reached out to folks at Cleveland Clinic for some practical training. And then I actually went with her to Cleveland Clinic to drop her off. And I reached out to Tom because I knew Tom from the general management program that he was in when I was a chair of that. And Tom, when I met him, he said, hey, you are on sabbatical, I hear. So what are you doing for your sabbatical next year? I said, I haven't thought about it. So that's when he reached out and said, hey, why don't you come here? Because we are actually, this is a big need for us and your expertise will come in handy. So it was just, again, a beautiful coincidence. And I'm a big believer, as I said, in things happen in your life, you take the opportunity as they come.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. So in your sabbatical and in your time at the clinic, what were some things that you learned? What were some key learnings that maybe were perhaps aha moments or maybe just reinforcements of things you already knew?
So I think a lot of things I've already studied and looked at many companies, but that became much more vivid when I was Cleveland Clinic. The first thing I would say is the meaning of digital transformation is different for different people. When you ask people, what is digital transformation? Everybody thinks differently.
Right.
And that's the same thing. And the first thing I asked people, you would remember,
yes,
in the management meeting, I said, okay, write down three things that come to your mind when you think of digital. And everybody had different views, right? Some people think of the shiny new object. Some people think of cost cutting, depending on the role you are in. So I think that is usually a problem in a company. And that's exactly, actually, Tom also mentioned this to me when I met him. He says, I hear 25 different things from 25 different people. And I need to focus on three big things that can align the entire organization of 60,000 people. And I heard the same thing from many other CEOs. In fact, Caspar Rostred, I met him in 2012 or 13 when he was the CEO of Henkel and now is the CEO of Adidas. And he told me the same thing. When he became the CEO of Henkel, he asked his senior management team to take an audit of all the digital experiments that were going inside the company. And his team stopped counting after 200. So everybody was doing something,
right,
and there was some excitement, but they added up to nothing. So I think that's the first lesson that I had, and I saw that at Cleveland Clinic also, that the meaning of digital transformation gets very diffused, and they're all good.
Yep.
But you can't focus on 25 small things. You have to align an organization about three big things. And that's the task of a leader, say, okay, paint the vision. Here are the three big things that we're going to do and why. And that is true at Cleveland Clinic also. The second thing I would say is, as we all know, digital transformation is not about technology. It's about the cultural change and the mindset change. And it takes an entire organization. And that is very hard, especially in an organization like, and again, going back to Cleveland Clinic, is where people do things, what they do extremely, extremely well. So you become very good at something. So why change?
Right.
Because change is always hard. I practiced something for 30 years. That's what made me good. And now you're asking me to do telemedicine? I mean, that's not real. It can't be the same quality. It's the same thing. I've been used to teaching in a physical classroom, and now comes Zoom, and there's no way I can think of that being the same thing, right?
Right.
Except that now, of course, we were forced to do it.
Right.
Imagine if my dean asked me 2 years ago, hey, teach on online, I would have said, no way. It's not exactly the same thing. So I think that's the mental anxiety that everybody has. For good reasons, because you have done something for a long period of time and perfected that. So that's a very hard thing, and you have to have a compelling reason and shepherd people along. And that cultural change is especially hard in organizations that are doing extremely well, because they have honed that skill, existing skill, so well. And the third thing I would say is, and I saw that at Cleveland Clinic firsthand also, that in digital transformation, you can't do everything by yourself. You need partners. you need partners for technology, whether for cloud computing or for data analysis or for whatever. I mean, you don't have all the skills. You can't take time to build all the skills. And that's also very hard for organizations who pride themselves for being excellent to give up control. And sometimes there's a lack of clarity. Will I get what I want? Who will own the IP? Who will have? And in this digital world, as you very well know, it's an ecosystem that you're building around.
Right.
Nobody can do everything alone. But that's the fear. And there is a negotiation that goes on as to who owns what and what who owns the platform, or who owns what's the governance structure look like. So I would say those three things. And of course, the thing that matters in any big change is leadership, right? So whether the leader is firm. In fact, we recently talked to Bob Iger at Disney and how he changed Disney Plus to launch Disney Plus and made a huge change. And his one comment that he made caught my attention, which he says, you don't request buy-in, you demand buy-in at some point in time.
Yeah.
And once you have a clarity of vision, that's your job as a leader to sort of say, this is where we're going to go. And either you're on the bus or you're not on the bus.
Yeah, I love that. We could actually stop the podcast right now. Those four things right there, pretty amazing. And I just want to reinforce what you said on the first one about the definition, because when you came in and we did that experiment, we had already started down the path of digital transformation and strategy, and had already had a lot of discussions about what we're trying to accomplish. So I was even surprised that we had that much variation. If my memory serves me correct, we had around 12 individuals, and we each wrote down the top three. So there's a total of 36 different answers you could have. So I'm thinking in my mind, we're probably at like 10. But no, actually it was in the 30s.
Yeah.
So even for an organization that had already started the discussion and started down that path, we still weren't quite all together. That just shows you how hard it is, you know, both from the cultural point of view and also when you're doing really well at something, you don't really think you need help or any outside assistance. Now, Sunil, you just mentioned Disney. So, and the example you gave was great about leadership. And I like at some point you do have to demand buy-in. I think one of the things in healthcare is we have 1,000 points of saying no. So many opportunities for a lot of people to stop things completely, I think, is maybe, I don't know. Healthcare is mostly what I've known at that in the military. And there in the military, you didn't have 1,000 points of no.
Yeah.
there was really one. But what other things have you discovered in other industries, like that example, that might carry over into healthcare that we could learn from?
So I think you have to simplify the process and the complexity of it, because digital transformation seems like a 12-headed demon in some ways. And you got to get simplified to the extent people can understand what we are trying to do and why. So one process that I've seen and also helped many companies work with, and that seems to be successful, is to think about digital transformation in three phases. Think of this as short-term, medium-term, and long-term. And these three phases, the first phase is to strengthen the core of your business. And that simply means there are a lot of inefficiencies that you have in your business. So for example, in a company like Cleveland Clinic, a significant portion of their revenue goes to call center or bill collection and things of those kind, which are not value added for the organization. So, and technology exists to automate that, to simplify that, it also improves customer experience, etc. Similarly, half the time or roughly half the time physicians spend in keeping records or noting down after the patient visit. That's not a productive use of the time. Voice-based technology exists to automate that process. So that's the first part, which is strengthening the core of what we do. As an example, for Harvard Business School, we have data all on different silos, and that doesn't serve anybody. If we can streamline that data and create a data lake, if you will, that will strengthen what we do. So that's not doing something new, but that's strengthening what we do, because over the years, we have patchwork of technology and patchwork of systems. The second phase, so that's much more on the optimization side, if you will, right? That's usually gets down to efficiency and cost reduction. And the reason why I think that's a good place to start is because you see immediate ROI, you have a good buy-in from CFOs and then the chief operating officers and others, because they see the immediate impact and you're getting this organization ready for it. Now, of course, when you do that first phase, you always have an eye on the future, because you don't want to make processes efficient that may be irrelevant in the future, right? So you need to think about what the process in the future will look like, and therefore make those processes much more efficient and productive. The second phase is about growing the business, the top line, not just cost cutting. And I think that's where many organizations fail, because most organizations stay with phase one of cost cutting and efficiency. And the growth can come in multiple ways. You can get into adjacent businesses, right? And Amazon is a great example that always grows top line 20-25% every quarter, just getting into adjacent businesses, right? When we were at Cleveland Clinic, we talked about going into chronic care management, right? I mean, Cleveland Clinic gets patients episodically. What happens to patients in between, we don't know. Chronic disease management is a big part of the healthcare system. A large part of the Medicare expenses go in chronic care management. There are startups coming in that area, but traditional organizations are not into it. So, or drug adherence, a huge opportunity to expand the pie.
Right.
But nobody's looking into that. That's good for patients and good for expanding the pie and growing the business. Right. So that's the second part I look at it in terms of, are there market opportunities that we can grow, because technology allows us to grow in that area that we could not do. As an example, for Harvard Business School, we only get 15,000 people on campus at any point in time, MBAs as well as exec ed. There is no reason why we can't reach to the world.
Right.
And now, earlier we were limited by our physical capacity of the campus, but in technology world, we are not. So can we reach 1 million people? Can we grow the pie, if you will? That's the second phase. And again, there are innovative ways to do that. And the third phase is really reimagining your business, which is saying, have the fundamentals of business changed dramatically? For education, we have to ask ourselves, what's the education landscape look like in the future? In healthcare, you have significant disruptions happening. Companies that you would never imagine will be in a healthcare business, whether it's Google or Apple or others, getting into healthcare. And they're playing a very different game, because Google will make money on the data, not on anything else, because it's the data and the AI and the ML company. So everybody comes with a different objective function, with a different strengths. And that, when the competitive landscape changes, you're playing a very different game. And I think that's when you have to reimagine the fundamental business proposition and how you play the game. So I think that's roughly the three phases that I think about. And of course, you always, it's not just when you focus on phase one, you forget about phase three, you're thinking about all three. It's just the frame of time is somewhat different for these three things.
Yeah, that's gold, pure gold. Thank you again. So let's move into something you just talked about, which was the entrance of Google. You use that as an example. So in the marketplace, I think you must find it fascinating how it's being completely disrupted now, not just by big tech, but on the provider side, you now have payers as competitors, right? Payers now own more primary care physicians than do providers, which is completely flipped from the way it used to be. Then you have retail in terms of Walmart, CVS, Rite Aid, Walgreens. They're all competing now with traditional providers. And then big tech, which, like I said, we already touched on, but you see more news every day, Microsoft and Nuance most recently. So what are your thoughts? What do you think is going on?
I think it's happening in almost every industry, which is every company is expanding the scope of their business. If you remember, we were taught, at least I was taught in my MBA days, about strategy is about focus. And focus was defined by, if I'm a bank, I only compete in banking, right? That's my business. If I'm a car company, I only do automobiles. If I'm a healthcare provider, I only focus on healthcare provision. If I'm a Google, I only focus on technology. But now, what business you are in is being defined by your capabilities rather than by industry boundaries. So what is the strength of Google? It's data and data analytics. Now, wherever data is important, Google will get into that business. If data is important in healthcare, which very well is, I will get into that. If data is important in IoT, I'll get into that. And that's exactly what's happening. So I think you will see this blurring of boundaries that is happening on almost every field. I mean, take Amazon, for example. Amazon came, we all think of Amazon as an e-commerce player, but it's a cloud computing guy also.
Right.
It's also make movies. It also makes a ton of money on advertising. So what is Amazon? I mean, obviously that's not what I was taught. I was taught strategy about focus. Obviously Jeff Bezos missed that class because he's not focusing on anything. But on the other hand, he's focusing. He's focusing on his capabilities, what he's good at, right? I think that's the capability defines what business you are in now.
No, I love that. I've just taken some notes myself. That's really insightful. So as we round the corner here towards the end of our time together, what are one or two things that members of our audience might want to think about? So just to frame it up a little bit more. So this is Digital Voices, again, across all the different segments of healthcare. And we can assume perhaps 20, 25% of our audience is already doing the things that you mentioned, Sunil. But the other 75%, they're just not there yet, but realize they have to do something. What are one or two things, if you were to advise them, what are one or two things they should start doing today?
I think I'll say one simple thing that Jeff Bezos has made his mantra at Amazon, which is work backwards, skill forward. What does that mean? Work backward means you have to have customer obsession and work, start with the customers and work backward as to how do you solve that problem. And he's done it over and over again. So take an example, when they started building the e-commerce platform marketplace, they said, how do we help the third party sellers to come on our platform? And they needed help to get all the e-commerce facilities. And they provided them. And skill forward means once you build that capability, you actually use that muscle to launch a new business. And that new business turned out to be AWS. Because once I built that infrastructure or muscle for my own customers, I launch it for somebody else. Same thing, Amazon is launching his health because they devised the system for their own employees. And once they built it for themselves, hey, I can offer it to somebody right. else also. So that's a beautiful way of saying work backwards to solve your existing problem for the customers. But once you build that muscle, skill forward, take that skill forward into completely new category. And I think Amazon is a prime example, but I've seen other places. When we talked to Cleveland Clinic, we were talking the same thing. Cleveland yep. Clinic has built this entire, the EICU center for monitoring different hospitals remotely for their own satellite hospitals. But once you have the skill, why can't you offer that service to any hospital in the world?
Right.
Who doesn't have the capability of Cleveland Clinic? So I think that simple mantra of work backwards, skill forward, I think it goes a long, long way of thinking about it.
Yeah, love it. So Sunil, is there anything we missed in the last few minutes of spending time together? Any other thing, any other pearls of wisdom that you might have for our audience?
No, I think these are the often said things that digital transformation, the journey, it never ends. And it's important to remember some of the, again, I'll quote Jeff Bezos, which is saying it's always day one. So how do you make sure that you're always in this entrepreneurial spirit? There's a very good tendency to become complacent once you become good at something. Yeah. We face that at Harvard Business School.
Yeah.
We say, oh, we are very good. How can anybody beat us? But guess what? So did Kodak, so did BlackBerry.
Right. Yeah. No, that's very insightful. As I expected, Sunil, thank you so much for spending time with our audience. Your insights are gold, very incredible, and hopefully we'll have more opportunity to interact in the future. Thank you for being our guest.
Thank you, Ed. Great talking to you.
Now for my favorite part of the podcast, your questions submitted from around the world.
I've really enjoyed your first couple of podcasts, and I was wondering, how are you going to keep them fresh and worth listening to?
So the way we keep things fresh is by continuously having really intriguing guests and topics. So you'll always hear new guests that you probably won't hear anyplace else. And we're always taking on more provocative topics and things that are germane today and in our future.
Hey there, I'm Daniel, one of the producers of this podcast. I'm usually not on the mic except for that awesome intro and outro, but I wanted to take a quick second to invite you to this year's Digital Voices Conference. Last year, I attended Digital Voices, and what I learned helped me level up in my career, my understanding of digital care, and impress my boss. This year's conference features chief digital officers from GE, Zoom, and Anthem. These are the foremost leaders in the space when it comes to digital healthcare. The conference is 100% virtual, so you don't have to mess with travel or PTO. Just log in at the time of the show. Digital Voices 2021 will be on Thursday, June 17th at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, and registration is 100% free. Just go to digitalvoices.com. That's DGTLvoices.com to register. Thanks again for listening.
Thank you for listening to Digital Voices Podcast with Ed Martin. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe on your preferred streaming service and leave a rating and review. And most importantly, thanks again for listening.